Big Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling, well, one of the biggest questions you could possibly ask. Does human history actually go anywhere? Is there a pattern, or is it just, you know, one thing after another? Chaos and conflict.
That huge question is exactly what we're digging into today, looking at Robert Wright's really landmark book, Non-Zero, The Logic of Human Destiny. And right, he doesn't really pull his punches. He says, yes, there is a pattern.
Okay, and what's driving it?
It's driven by something pretty fundamental, actually. Pragmatic, even. The logic of cooperation.
So he's saying history isn't some mystical journey, no predestination, but it follows a kind of practical sense.
Exactly. And understanding that logic, he argues, is absolutely crucial for us right now. I mean, look around. We're globally connected like never before.
Facing these massive planet-sized challenges, right? Climate change, pandemics, supply chains that suddenly feel very fragile.
Yeah, precisely. And if we don't get the mechanism, the history that created this tight interdependence, well, we're basically flying blind trying to solve these global problems. Wright's offering a kind of map.
A map showing how billions of years literally have pushed life towards more and maybe now mandatory collaboration.
That's the core idea. And if anyone can connect those dots from, you know, the first cells to modern global politics, it feels like Robert Wright can.
Yeah, he's got this really interesting background. Journalist, author, scholar, known for weaving together science and social thought. He's been a fellow, lectured at Princeton.
Right, and many people will know his earlier book, The Moral Animal. Huge book. It explored evolutionary psychology, how Darwinian thinking shapes our behavior, our morals.
And that biological grounding seems key for Non-Zero, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It gives him this incredible intellectual reach. He's a genuine big picture thinker. He's not stuck in one academic box.
No, he's comfortable talking game theory, then molecular biology, then boom, he's analyzing ancient Rome's tax efficiency. It's quite the range.
And that range lets him build this unified theory. It cuts across fields we normally keep separate: biology, culture, history, technology. He's offering one lens.
A single lens to see this persistent force pushing towards complexity, towards organization, throughout the history of life.
Okay, so let's get into that core thesis then. Because it sounds complex, but it's actually quite elegant at its heart.
He says history, both biological and cultural, follows this directional path. And it's propelled by the expansion of something called non-zero-sum interactions.
Right. We really need to unpack that term, non-zero-sum. It's central. It comes from game theory. It's the counterpoint to the more familiar idea of
zero-sum, the classic win-lose, like splitting a pie or, you know, a bucket of gold. The more I get, the less you get. Games and losses cancel out. It sums to zero.
Exactly. But non-zero-sum interactions. That's where the potential is. These are situations where if we work together, we can actually create more value, a win-win.
We bake a bigger cake together than either of us could alone.
Right. But crucially, and this is important, non-zero-sum also includes the potential for lose-lose. If cooperation breaks down, if conflict takes over, we can both end up worse off.
Okay, so the book's main argument is that despite all the conflict, all the noise, life over the long haul tends to favor finding and exploiting these win-win scenarios.
That's the engine. This drive, this necessity really, pushes towards greater complexity, more interdependence, from the tiniest biological partnerships to, well, the global economy.
And this gives a basis for what he calls cautious optimism.
Cautious optimism, yeah. It's not based on wishful thinking or moral ideals. It's grounded in these practical, almost self-interested forces that have shaped life for billions of years.
Let's dig into that biological root, because you said it's foundational. He argues this cooperative logic isn't just human culture. It starts way, way earlier.
Way earlier. He kicks off near the dawn of complex life itself with the eukaryotic cell. You know, the type of cell that makes up basically all complex life, animals, plants, us.
And he sees its origin as this monumental act of cooperation billions of years ago.
Exactly. It wasn't just evolution finding a slightly better way. It was a merger. Ancient bacteria, separate organisms, came together. One essentially engulfed another.
But instead of destroying it,
they formed a partnership, a symbiotic relationship. The engulfed bacterium became the mitochondrion, the cell's powerhouse.
Giving this new combined cell a massive energy advantage.
A game-changing advantage. It enabled cells to get bigger, to specialize, to do much more complex things than the original parts could alone. A fundamental win-win that confer this huge survival edge. It's cooperation baked into our very biology.
And then that scales up, right? The next big leap is multicellularity, going from single cells to complex creatures like us.
It's the next logical step in social organization, if you think about it that way. Individual cells started specializing, become a nerve cell, a muscle cell, whatever.
Sacrificing their independence, their autonomy.
For the good of the whole organism, yeah. This deep interdependence creates something far more robust, far more capable. It's another layer of non-zero-sum logic written into our bodies.
So biology sets the stage. Then, when humans arrive with culture, technology takes over as the main driver.
That's the key transition he points to. Technology becomes the accelerator. It consistently expands the scale and the efficiency of cooperation.
And in early human history, the killer app wasn't digital, it was.
Writing. Absolutely. Yeah. Writing was the critical early information technology. Think about Mesopotamia, Egypt,
Rome.
It allowed them to create a kind of social brain, managing huge networks.
Exactly. Trade, laws, taxes.
Yeah.
Stuff that was impossible to manage effectively just through memory or spoken word across large areas. Writing provided the software for civilization.
And maybe the ultimate early example of this cultural non-zero-sum network is something like the Roman Empire.
Yeah, I mean, obviously built with a lot of coercion, let's be clear. Brutal in many ways.
Yeah.
But it undeniably created this vast network for exchange.
Common currency, laws, those famous roads.
It drastically lowered the costs of trade, interaction, movement of ideas, relatively speaking. It created stability, however imperfect, over huge areas, which allowed for more complex, beneficial interactions. Win-win, at least for some.
Okay, but here's the pushback, right? Someone looks at the 20th century, world wars, genocide, horrific conflict. Where's the non-zero logic there? That looks like ultimate zero-sum destruction.
That is the absolute critical question, and Wright tackles it directly. He doesn't ignore the horror. He frames those massive conflicts as the noise around the signal.
Noise versus signal. Okay, what does that mean?
The conflicts, however devastating, are often brutal fights over who gets to control and benefit from the expanding cooperative system. There are struggles within the trend towards integration, not necessarily reversal of it.
So even as horrific zero-sum conflict rages, the underlying technological capacities, the ability to connect, coordinate, produce, might still be advancing, setting the stage for the next phase of integration.
That's the argument. The long-term signal of interdependence tends to reassert itself, even after terrible setbacks. Think about the post-WWII institutions, for example.
Okay, so fast forward. We get the printing press, accelerating the spread of ideas, or memes, as Wright calls them, borrowing that term.
Right. Then railroads, telegraphs,
yeah.
They shrink the world, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly, economic fates in different continents are much more tightly linked.
And now, today, the internet, global finance, these incredibly complex supply chains, we're essentially building a single planetary global brain.
That's the metaphor he uses. Information, goods, money, ideas flashing around the planet almost instantly, linking everyone. The benefits in terms of efficiency, specialization, wealth creation, they're undeniable. Immense.
But there's the paradox. The very success, the very interconnectedness of this global brain
creates vulnerabilities on the same scale. Global vulnerabilities. Our shared problems are now planet-sized because our system is planet-sized.
Which leads us to what Wright calls the final test. Things like climate change, nuclear weapons, pandemics. These seem like the ultimate non-zero-sum games.
They really are. They epitomize the lose-lose potential. You can't build a wall high enough to keep out climate change or a novel virus, can you?
No. The atmosphere, the biosphere, these are shared resources. You can't opt out.
So competition, acting purely in narrow self-interest, becomes actively self-destructive in these domains. Cooperation isn't just nice or beneficial anymore.
It's mandatory for survival.
It's the only rational path forward. The logic of history, Wright argues, is pushing us towards recognizing this, whether we like it or not.
It really reframes things. These huge global challenges aren't just political squabbles. They're pragmatic tests of whether we can finally scale up cooperation to the planetary level that our technology has created.
Okay, so let's try and boil this down. What are the really key themes, the main messages you take away from this whole framework?
For me, number one has to be technology as the driver. Every big innovation language, agriculture, printing, the internet, it didn't just make things faster. It fundamentally changed the potential for cooperation.
Right. It opened up new ways for people to interact beneficially.
And that forced societies to adapt. to create new rules, new institutions, new ways of organizing to actually use that new potential.
Yeah, I mean, just think about something simple like a group chat app. How much complex coordination can happen instantly in a small community now compared to just a few decades ago? The tech creates the possibility.
Okay, theme two. This one's fascinating. The expanding moral circle is pragmatic. Right suggests our morality evolves partly out of necessity.
It's not just that we become nicer people over time, necessarily.
No, it's that as our fates become more intertwined economically, ecologically, with more distant groups, it actually becomes rational. It's in our self-interest to care about their well-being.
So when we worry about human rights abuses far away or climate impacts on the other side of the world, it's not just altruism.
According to this view, it's also a recognition, perhaps subconscious, that their problems can become our problems very quickly in an interconnected world. Interdependence makes caring practical.
Okay, interesting. And a third theme.
I think it's the persistence. The logic of history is persistent. That underlying trend towards greater non-zero-sumness, towards integration, it's like a current.
There's so much noise, right? Wars, crises, setbacks.
Absolutely. Constant noise. But Wright argues the underlying signal, the long-term direction, is towards more complex cooperation. It keeps reasserting itself.
And looking at history that way,
Well,
it does offer a kind of rational basis for hope, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even when things look really bleak day to day, it suggests this integration thing isn't just fragile, wishful thinking.
It's a deep, powerful current. Okay, the book is full of these really big, synthesizing ideas. Let's maybe highlight a few core concepts that really stick out.
Yeah, like that central claim you mentioned earlier, the idea that history has a direction, and that direction is toward greater non-zero-sumness.
It's such a bold statement, isn't it? It directly challenges views of history as purely cyclical or random or just driven by power struggles. It posits this underlying logic.
A logic that stands biology and culture. And because we are cultural beings, we have agency, which leads to another key idea. Cultural evolution is much like biological evolution, except that it's conscious and therefore much faster.
Right. We can think, we can plan, we can invent technologies and institutions deliberately to enhance cooperation, unlike blind biological evolution.
Well,
we can potentially accelerate the process.
Which brings us right back to our current global situation. That stark metaphor he uses really captures the essence of it. In the end, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah. There's no escaping it now, is there? On these big planetary issues, we genuinely sink or swim together.
Okay, so bringing this down to Earth, how can we actually use this way of thinking in our own lives, maybe?
Well, start small. Think about conflicts, a disagreement at home, a negotiation at work. Ask yourself, is this really a fixed pie, a zero-sum game, or am I just treating it that way out of habit?
Because our instincts, our evolutionary baggage, maybe, often pushes us towards competition, towards winning at the expense of the other side.
Right. Wright's framework pushes you to consciously override that, to ask, okay, wait, is there a way we can solve this so the outcome is better for both of us? Can we find a non-zero-sum solution?
Which often means strengthening the relationship in the long run, right? Creating more value together down the line.
Exactly. And you can see that in business, too. Companies that focus purely on extracting value in the short term, they might win for a bit.
But the ones that focus on creating value for everyone involved, employees, customers, suppliers, the community, those tend to be the ones that last, the more resilient ones. They're playing the long, non-zero-sum game.
And then scaling up to policy. Thinking this way means seeing international cooperation, global institutions, things like climate agreements, not as, I don't know, charity or sacrificing sovereignty,
but as practical necessities, as rational self-interest on a global scale, needed to manage the shared risks that our interconnected world inevitably creates.
Okay, final thoughts. What's the one thing that really struck you most about this deep dive into non-zero?
For me, it has to be the sheer unity of knowledge he pulls off.
Yeah.
The idea that the same basic game theory logic can help explain a merger between ancient bacteria and the dynamics of the modern global economy, That's breathtaking, really.
It offers the single powerful lens to view just everything, all of history.
What about you?
I think for me, it's the antidote it offers to, well, to cynicism. It's easy to look at the world and feel overwhelmed, like things are just chaotic or falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
But recognizing that cooperation, this non-zero-sum logic, isn't some fragile ideal, but this incredibly powerful, pragmatic force that has literally been winning out over billions of years, it gives you a kind of grounded confidence.
Confidence that maybe we can tackle these huge global challenges.
Yeah, a confidence that history hasn't just been random chaos. In a way, it's been systematically building the tools and maybe the necessity for us to cooperate on this ultimate planetary scale. We've been prepared for this moment.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.